Hello everybody and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 47. And All About Symbian Insight 47 is also now known as All About Symbian Podcast number 100. Woohoo! 100 podcasts, but we're not really celebrating this week because we're going to wait for the big 50 for All About Symbian Insight. So this week we've got the usual roundup, and it's me, Rafe Blanford.
Me, Steve Litchfield.
And where's Ewan gone? That's right, that's the theme of this week's podcast. Doom. Doom, I tell you. Isn't that right, Ewan?
Yes, it is. I got the show notes and what we're going to talk about, and I seem to be walking around here with a great big leather hoodie and a massive sickle over my shoulder and a horse called Blinky.
That's very nice. So I think we'll move straight on to our first topic. As we say, it's doom and gloom in this week's Insight. And the first bit of doom and gloom is numbers from Canalys. Steve, can you tell us about this?
Yes, we always love the Canalys numbers, released every quarter for the worldwide smartphone market in terms of manufacturer, also in terms of OS vendor. I mean, you've probably seen them on the site, but just to briefly recap, Nokia, on the face of it, down 3%, which doesn't sound like very much, but slightly more significant is the fact that RAM and Apple have both made major gains. Apple's up 523%, which sounds rather astronomical. It was basically because a year ago they just launched their iPhone, basically, and they've now had the launch, the big iPhone 3G, which sold in its 10 million or so in its first month. So we're up to Apple up 17% of the worldwide smartphone market, Nokia at 38.9% and RAM at 15.2%. So the story here is that Apple and RAM are making decent numbers of sales that are certainly on the same playing field as Nokia. Nokia are going to have to watch their back here. 38.9% of the worldwide smartphone market, that's still very healthy, but it was 51.4%. I don't think Nokia need to worry. They do need to just look over their shoulder and make sure they keep pressing ahead, keep innovating, and hopefully we're going to see something along the innovation lines in 2009.
Thank you, Steve. And Ewan, I know I was talking to this about you, and you said the concern for you was really how Nokia were performing within the context of the rest of the market. So perhaps you'd like to highlight that a little.
Yeah, I think that the key phrase for people who are not looking for doom and gloom and to try and find a little gem in this is worldwide smartphone market. And these are our devices that generally have high specifications, that are quite high in sales. We'll have things like music, we'll have MP3, we'll have video, you know, GPS, massive cameras on them. And Nokia have a significant number of sales not in that space, in the so-called, you know, feature phone market or the dumb phone or the lower phone market. So, you know, in that sense, you know, this is only reflecting part of Nokia's business, but it's reflecting pretty much all of Apple's business and all of RIM's business. And I just love the fact that Steve said REM, and I'm thinking, when did Michael Stipe start doing phones? There we go. But the problem, of course, is these are the phones which have the highest margins. These are the phones which contribute significantly to the bottom line. You would rather sell a million smartphones than a million feature phones with a standard candy bar at $50 or £50 on a pay-as-you-go contract. So what's actually happening is Nokia's most valuable sales unit is actually being cannibalized. It's lowering Nokia's revenue per handset. Now, when you have companies such as Apple who can put all their focus on one device at the high end to the people who will spend $400 or $500 on a phone in a recession, and Nokia are spreading their effort a lot thinner and aren't making as much per handset, then they need not only be looking over the shoulder at the markets, but they also need to be looking over the shoulder at their shareholders and at the banks as well. Nokia aren't in a position where they want to have to capitalize their business and bring in more money for investment and such. Like, as to be honest, neither are Apple. They're probably the highest capitalized company out there currently in the sort of web and internet world in terms of spare cash that they're sitting on. Nokia should be worrying about that as well. They don't have as big a cash pile for Apple. And even if they each decided to spend like for like, Apple only have to advertise one model. Nokia had to have to advertise all their models, the network variants, millions of firmwares to keep updated. There's a reason Apple have one network per country per iPhone. It's because they don't have to deal with 27 million firmware variants.
I think that's all interesting. And of course, Euron's underlining there that they're very different businesses, very different business models. However, this, you know, was actually slightly a trick question from me, because I really don't think there is a reason to be that concerned. It's certainly not doom and gloom. And there's a couple of things that I'd like to point out here. The main area of concern for me is not really about changing market share, because I think that's inevitable. It's high time that Nokia had some more competition in this space, and it was inevitable. And the same goes for the Symbian numbers, which of course have done, you know, a similar thing, dropping from around 65%, depending on which one you read, to, you know, again about 45-50% or whatever. But there's a lot of buts in here. The concern for me is actually that Nokia sales have shrunk slightly while the rest of the smartphone industry is growing. And I'd have actually think it would be more encouraging to see Nokia sales at least staying static or growing slowly. Clearly, the percentages are not going to be the same. On the other hand, you have to look at, you know, some of the exceptional outliers. You know, for example, Apple, it was just after they launched the iPhone 3G, so initially they get a sales bump. I actually think the outstanding performer here is RIM myself. And more to the point, with some of the Symbian figures, you actually have to look at the underlying causes. Actually, the drop in Symbian market share is more down to performance in Japan. And the reason that's dropped is because there's been recent regulatory changes, which mean they're no longer subsidising the high-cost 3G handsets. I mean, that's simplifying what's happened. So as a result, sales numbers for phones in Japan have dropped significantly overall. I think you also need to look at some of the underlying trends here. For example, if you take the US market out of the worldwide figures, then all of a sudden Nokia goes back up to something like 80% market share, 85% in some markets. And I think it's particularly significant in the developing markets, which are going to be the big ones in years to come. And the US is a bit of an oddity, but I think it's definitely, you know, it's discovered smartphones, if you will, particularly with the Apple iPhone, but also with the impressive performance of RIM in the US over the last year. So, you know, when we talk about doom and gloom, I actually think it's completely misplaced. That said, obviously Nokia does face a lot more competition, and I think this year has perhaps been one of Nokia's leaner years in terms of some of the devices that it's had coming out. In the first 6 months of the year, we didn't really have any S60 devices, which would of course be in the smartphone category in the Canalys numbers. And only now we're starting to see some of the ones come out. You know, the E-series are going to really start to make their presence felt, I think, in Q4. And we've also got things like the N-series, the N96 and the 5800 coming up. And sort of to underline that, I think, Steve, you've got a few thoughts about what it's going to be like in 2009. And I know Canalys have actually said that they expect you know, the market share for both RIM and Nokia to increase going into 2009. So, Steve, on 2009, what do you think?
Well, you mentioned it briefly there, that the cycle of products, and Nokia have got their kind of their next guard, things like the N85 and N79, even the N9, much maligned N96, and of course the 5800 and successors. All that, those four devices in particular, they'll all come on stream in with big numbers, probably around December, January, February. So the quarter four and quarter one shipments for next year will be much healthier for Nokia. In the meantime, we've got this kind of lull. We've got the existing products look a bit dated and a bit old, and the new products haven't actually come out yet in the shops in any great numbers. So yeah, I think we're in a lull, and I think the 2009, certainly at the start of 2009, will look a lot healthier for Nokia.
That's great. And I think that really underlines a very important point here, that you can't read too much into one quarter's figure. And, you know, I think actually what's been surprising is how long Nokia and Symbian have been able to maintain their dominance in market share. And lest we forget, they're still bigger than their three nearest competitors combined together. So certainly one to keep an eye on. But, you know, I've seen a lot of very negative commentary about this around the internet and in various other podcasts and in the media, and I think really a lot of that is misplaced. As we say, there's certainly a pause for thought, but you have to look at some of the underlying meanings and look for longer term trends. But as I say, we'll be keeping an eye on that. But staying with the doom theme, I think the next thing we want to talk about on this insight is the N-Gage. So Euron, I think you're going to introduce this topic, so take it away.
That about sums it up. Last post, I think. N-Gage is dead. It's on life support. We've got an editorial on this that's just passed, but I just want to go over some of these points again. I got really surprised. There was the recent N-Gage Nokia Gaming Conference was on it, and a couple of numbers were presented there. You know, 400,000 profiles have been registered since we launched, and you know, all these games and all these partners. But I have to say that when you actually look at these numbers in comparison, they're shocking. 400,000 people have registered for the N-Gage Arena to get the client to download the games. Let's say, be very generous and say that 300,000 of them are regular users of N-Gage. So 75% take up. I suspect it's lower, but I'm going to be really, really generous here. The other number that's given, 20 million N-Series handsets are capable of N-Gage. Nokia's turnover rate here, conversion is 1.5%. That's lower than a direct marketing campaign, which generally brings in 2-3%. What's even worse is that those, let's go back up, 400,000 profiles in 12 months. Let's say that they can get to, you know, next year they can do the same again and another 50%. So they get 1 million profiles in 2 years, which is 150% growth. The N-Gage Classic and the QD between them had 3 million hardware sales in 2 years on 57 titles. At the moment, the N-Gage next generation N-Gage platform is underperforming even compared to the Taco. There's less games, there's less players, there's less of an ecosystem. And what are Nokia doing? They're keeping it locked down with DRM. They're upsetting their major partners. Electronic Arts have done some really biting comments. EA Mobile head Peter Parmeter came out with, get these two quotes: I think it's easier to get an audience with the Pope than it is to get a game through certification at Nokia. And this is even more worrying, especially as we go into a recession. As a publisher, we will make twice the revenue from selling an iPhone game in Italy than we will from selling an N-Gage game at the same price. The N-Gage, the gaming part of Ovi, needs a serious, serious shake-up or put out of its misery.
Okay. Discuss. Okay, thank you for that doom-laden thing. I think I'll come back, but I know Steve's also got a thought on N-Gage, so do you want to introduce that, Steve?
Yeah, any regular listener to this podcast will know that I hate DRM, and it just gets in the way. And whether you're talking about the Nokia Music Store or hear about N-Gage, the DRM and the licensing problems and codes and activation systems, they get hugely in the way. For example, I mean, we just had this big editorial from Chris talking about the way you can only transfer a code from one game from one device to another. That's it. You can't then go to a third device. And you may say that's just power users who might want to change their device more than twice in, say, 18 months. But hey, look, the N-Gage gaming system, this whole ecosystem is driven around the sort of top 20-30% who actually do things with their phones, who play games on them, who buy music on it, who try and do everything from their handset. People like me, people like you, and people like yourself. And it's just not working. I'm a passionate fan of golf games, as you know. I love the Pro Series Golf on the N-Gage. I bought it, £8 or something, whatever it was. I enjoyed it, played a few games with Rafe, and then I changed device. I tried to change it. I sent emails off. I filled out forms. And a month later, I still hadn't got the game transferred onto the new device, let alone onto my third device, which is the device I then moved on to. And I'd have had to go through the whole thing all over again, and it wouldn't have worked because of Nokia's current policy. I'd have had to pay for the game all over again. As a result, I simply switched back and bought Tiger Woods 09 as a Java game, which I'd installed onto a memory card. I can now run that game on any device I own, with no activation code, no hassle. It's not quite as good, but hey, my life is simpler. And over again, we're seeing user stories, anecdotal stories of people saying, I've bought music or I've bought a game, and I've had tremendous problems when I've changed device, and it's just not worth it. People would rather go out and look for cracked and cracked versions, simply because they don't have to worry about this activation system. If the N-Gage games were DRM-free, okay, there'll be some piracy, but there's piracy anyway. Again, anecdotal, I've just been chatting with Rafe before this podcast about a certain commercial product, which I won't name, but it's just come out in beta. And already, the beta's been out 2 days, and the top 10 matches on Google, 8 of them were for a torrented, cracked version of it. This software in the mobile world and in the mainstream computer world is so pirated already that why bother the honest users with DRM? Make it DRM-free, make it easier to transfer. Just reinstall your game on your new phone. The power users will be happy, the active users will be happy, and the good vibes will spread throughout the ecosystem, not bad vibes.
Two replies on that one. Firstly, on the piracy issue, going back to EA Mobile's Peter Mayabetter, this is a direct quote from him speaking at the Gaming Summit, by the way. I won't tell you how many EA Mobile games have been downloaded from this site. It's a very large number. It's not a system we want to promote. One guess each what site he's talking about.
Well, I happen to know what he's talking about, so should I give the game away?
No, I'm bowing to Rafe here. Go ahead.
It's Nokia's Mosh site, which is their user-generated content site.
Nokia's own site is providing one of the most pirated and easy-to-find spaces for games for the N-Gage and S60. It's absolutely ridiculous. Steve, I do agree with you with the DRM transfers, but I actually think the underlying issues with the N-Gage go far, far deeper than needing a simple policy change. I think there are people inside the N-Gage that understand the gaming market, that understand how the whole ecosystem works, from the magazines, the publishers, developers, to copyright issues. We don't know who owns these games. I mean, Nokia are bringing them out. Did Nokia retain the copyright on these? Are we not getting any touch because people aren't going through certification, because they don't want to hand over certain rights to Nokia? Really, there just needs to be a wholesale, absolute change. This isn't time for tweaking at the edges. The N-Gage QD was a tweak on the edges of the original N-Gage Classic, and about 9 to 10 months in, the N-Gage actually started to get traction. We had titles like Pocket Kingdom, Pathway to Glory. We started getting free demos. Snake was given away as a free game. They actually got it and tweaked it. To be in the same place again, you know, once is happenstance, twice is a mistake, third time is enemy action. Nokia are continuing to make the same mistakes that they made from the original N-Gage platform, and then some.
Well,
we need to, Rafe.
Yeah, well, I'm going to come back here because, you know, I do agree that N-Gage has its problem, but I think you're overblowing the situation completely. And this is a friendly bit of disagreement on the All About Symbian podcast. Actually, what Steve was saying about game transfers, I mean, I do actually think that should have been sorted out by now. But just to make it clear, there is a solution on the way, some kind of games locker that will mean not only will you be able to transfer your games, you'll be able to transfer save data between devices. I think it's long overdue, but the N-Gage team don't exactly have the best track record of delivering things on time. Going back to what Ewan was saying, I actually think 400,000 is a pretty good achievement in the context of how it's happened. And I think what you have to bear in mind here is that N-Gage, the new platform, has really been only going 6 months, and it had very much a soft launch. And while it's starting to gather pace, I think it would be fair to say, you know, it's now live and available. But despite that, we've actually seen very few devices on which it's shipped out of the box. It's actually required you to download and install it. I think that's why we've seen such relatively small numbers. Ewan was talking about 20 million N-Series devices. I think even that's probably being generous, because that includes some N-Series devices which are not, in fact, compatible with N-Gage for one reason or another, either because the firmware haven't been upgraded. The good example of that is something like the N95. You know, there are millions of N95s out there, but you have to upgrade to the most recent firmware in order to be able to run the N-Gage client. And I think, to my knowledge, the only devices with the shipping with N-Gage built in at the moment are the N96 and the N85. Some of the older devices have been updated, so they do now ship with it, but of course that takes a while to feed through. The N82 and the N81 are examples of that, but I was talking to someone who bought one the other day and it still didn't have it available out of the box. So obviously that takes a while to come into the retail channels. So I think we really have to give it a year of being available out of the box, with sort of inbox promotions like we have with the N96, where they're giving away a free copy of a game. Same applies to the N85. Give it a year, and then we can sort of take a look at the numbers. And at the end of the day, you know, 400,000 for the first 6 months isn't bad. That's actually more than both the original N-Gage devices achieved first time round, I do agree with you in that there needs to be better performance, but I think you're being a bit too doom-laden there. And
well, actually, no, 400,000 is less than the original Engage QD.
Well, if we talk about the first 4 months of, or 4 or 5 months of that device, because bear in mind these numbers will be about a month or two behind real time.
Nokia shipped 400,000 of the original Engage device at launch.
Well, they said they did, but I think the reality was probably a little bit different.
They shipped 400,000.
They didn't actually sell any of them. But yes, of course.
But at best, it's matched the original one.
Yeah, I think that'd be fair to say. So all I'm saying is I think you need to give it more time. And actually, I think what really needs work on is, as Ewan says, there are some problems with the system, but I think it's just about delivering things in a timely manner. And I think it's perhaps inevitable. This is a new area of business for Nokia, and I think we see this problem throughout the OVI services, that Nokia is still learning how to build and deliver services. You know, it's a radical change from being a company that has point releases of devices to one where not only are the devices moving to a pattern where you'll see very significant software updates for the devices, something completely new is building software. And on the scale that we're talking about, when you're building for a global audience, you know, hundreds of millions of people potentially, this is very difficult. And I think really, to my mind, the only one of these that is in any way mature is the Nokia Music solution, and that only applies to the very recent devices which ship with the Nokia Music client. If you combine all those together, you get a pretty good music experience, but there's still a bunch of old devices out there with the old stuff, still old devices shipping with that. So, you know, it gives you some idea of the problems faced in trying to launch this kind of thing, and I really think perhaps that's where Nokia should focus their efforts and sort of some of that enablement. And all this sort of stuff on the way, you know, being able to update devices automatically, being able to push updates out more easily, is on the way. And I still see it coming together. And I think the frustration probably comes from, if you know about it, you want it to happen today. Where the reality is, of course, with business, it can take quite a long time to actually get these things working. I think you could say the same about Engage. So for all the frustration, I still think the potential is there. So perhaps the doom-laden stuff isn't quite as strong as I thought. Ewan, would you say that's a fair comment?
I think the truth lies somewhere in between, as with all debates. I think when you look at other systems that have went from a standing start, I think the Engage is lacking. I think that Nokia, great, yes, they have OVI, they have all these elements, but they're not talking. The gaming system, one transfer. Music, more than one transfer. Nothing in OVI seemed to be meshing yet. And the Engage, because it's going into, I mean, the gaming market is mature. And why aren't there more games? Why isn't there more promotion on devices? I take on board the fact that they're not shipping in the firmware, but it shouldn't be that difficult to put an icon on the screen that as a URL shortcut in firmware updates on any of the devices to actually pull down the client. It's not in the firmware then, and it still gives people the choice, but it promotes the service. When you have your major partners saying that we're losing money, you're promoting the piracy of the games, we can make more money on another handset. When you have a much larger addressable user base, and it's the same size as the one you had 5 years ago, I know there is a ground in the middle, and I know that I am really putting on the cloak of doom here, but I think it needs it, and I think somebody needs to kick somebody else up the backside.
Okay, thank you, Ewan.
Publicly.
Well, we are, of course, you know, exaggerating somewhat with our doom-laden stories, but there is a point to all of this in that, you know, there are valid points to be made, as Ewan, I think, very succinctly put it there. On to one more bit of, I think this does really qualify as doom in a way, and it's rather sad news. And this was the news this week that UIQ has put its final 270 staff on notice in their Ronneby office. And what this means is they've been given notice of dismissal, but Sony Ericsson have agreed to fund the company on a month-by-month basis, you know, probably for a few months, there's no actual time specified, to give them the chance to look into options for the future. And this could include selling UIQ to someone else or restructuring it internally and working on some projects. But inevitably, this means, you know, a lot of staff will be leaving to set up their own companies or go to work for someone else, and indeed UIQ's supporting in that. But this really is the end of the UIQ platform, and you know, it's happened rather faster than I thought it might. You know, there were a couple more UIQ devices due out from Motorola in 2009, but they've been canned with Motorola's platform strategy change. And similarly, Sony Ericsson cancelled some back in the summer. But there's sort of, it's one of those inevitable things that happens in the mobile industry, but it still sort of brings a tear to my eye because I have very fond memories of picking up my very first smartphone, which was a Sony Ericsson P800, and being amazed by that device. And UIQ had so much potential, as we've mentioned in past podcasts. So, you know, it's really the end of the road now for UIQ as a platform. We may well see stuff come back from other places, but so that's really probably the last time we're going to mention UIQ in a great deal of detail. No doubt we'll talk a little bit about some of the software and some of the backstory, but certainly I shed a tear, and our thoughts go to all the people in Ronneby who are going to be looking for new opportunities, and wishing the very best of luck. Steve, I know you haven't been the biggest UIQ fan over the years, but I think it's always a shame when something like this happens.
Yeah, in fact, I was a huge UIQ fan in the early days. I just think they started to lose the plot somewhere around 2005, 2006 with UIQ3, which was just waiting and waiting and never seemed to arrive and was never really what people wanted. A great, great shame. But I don't think, like you, I don't think we've seen the last of the people who work at UIQ. A lot of them are going to carry on working in the Symbian Foundation and the Symbian ecosystem. So the intellectual property and their ideas and their creativity, I'm sure, will ripple through.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's absolutely right. Now, we did have some positive news that we were going to talk about this week, but we're sort of running out of time. So I'm afraid it's going to have to be a completely doom-laden podcast, but we'll be back on our usual bouncy bunny form in next week's podcast. So thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to Rafe Blumph, and it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from Steve Litchfield.
And it's goodbye from me, Ewan Spence. Bye-bye.